it's time for your weekly dose of movie news, reviews, and the occasional rumor. Here's your host, Todd Vandenberg, Lee Vowell, and Rob Steele. This is Cinema Savants. And coming up in this week's show, there's so much trouble you'd think we had a Pop-O-Matic bubble factory. Yes, one of the Chris's is in trouble. Ben Affleck is in a different kind of trouble. Even Pixar is in trouble. But I'm going to start off with something that's, frankly, probably going to get me into trouble. Captain America. It's not Captain America. It's Captain Marvel, which is a Marvel character. Go figure. Anyway, the first female-led Marvel movie is going to have the first woman to write the score for a Marvel movie. Yay for them, I suppose. It's not something I particularly keep track of, but it's being written by a woman named Pinar Toprak. Here's the part where I go to hell. Pinar Toprak sounds like a large-breasted porn star. There's my joke. Thank you. I'll be in hell for the rest of eternity. I think she'll do good. I mean, if you want to know about the name, she's a Turkish-American. That's where it came from. And she's done other movies, like the wonderful score for Geostorm and Behind Enemy Lines 2. I have to admit, I never saw either of those, but you know what?
That was an Owen Wilson film with Gene Hackman. Is that what that was?
It could have been. John Cena as a Marine. No.
I mean, it sounds ridiculous what I'm saying, but I think
Owen Wilson was in Behind Enemy Lines 2. I think you're right.
I lost track after Behind Enemy Lines 1. I just know. I was teasing about the name. I was being silly.
It's probably Toprak, and yes, you will suffer for it, I'm sure.
Although it's not going to get me in nearly as much trouble as Chris Hardwick is in. Although I have found a lot of inconsistencies in this story. One of our favorite Chris's, Chris Hardwick, is facing allegations that he sexually assaulted and abused his, and here's where it gets confusing, it's either his wife, Chloe Hardwick, his girlfriend, Chloe Dykstra, or ex-girlfriend 3 years ago, Chloe Dykstra. I've seen articles from reputable sources saying all three. I'm confused as to what the relationship is.
Oh my gosh.
They all seem to say that the relationship started when he was 39 and she was 21, which sounds creepy.
Well, it's creepy. What kind of abuse are they alleging? Is it like physical or sexual?
It is emotionally abusive. Allegedly sexual assault was involved. There are some allegations that he has beaten her, some that he hasn't. All we have so far as a result of all this is AMC has dropped the show Talking with Chris Hardwick, and the Nerdist website has disavowed him completely, to the point where it doesn't even say, oh, he's one of the founders. He's just gone entirely.
My hope is that Chloe is one and the same, like the girlfriend turned into the wife, and that he's not just abusing lots of different Chloes.
Yeah, that's just weird that there's not a consistency in the story so far.
Not that I'm hoping he ever did it. Let me just put that out there. I hope he didn't. And if he did, he's much worse than saying something about a female composer. But I'm hoping at least it's one person, although if it's one, it's probably several.
One is too many, but yes.
Yeah, of course. I want to say first that I think actually this is all a complete factitious story. This is fake news, that it was actually Lenny Dykstra. And it was consensual. and aside from making a terrible joke,
I had written that in my notes, and I said, no, I'm not going to make a Lenny Dykstra reference. That'd be too easy.
Ah, yes. I'm so happy that.
And probably true, too. Well, sadly.
He was arrested this past week, wasn't he?
Again.
Yes.
It's a baseball thing. Look him up.
Back to my fifth favorite Chris, unless this is true, then he drops off the roster.
Yes.
You know, part of this, and we've talked about this several times, is, and we all are obviously, and if it's not obvious, it should be obvious, we're all in support of the Me Too movement, of correct treatment for what happens in these situations. But the fact that there are apparently three different versions of this story, that kind of tells me that maybe AMC jumped the gun a little bit. I mean, if the story isn't even straight, Don't you actually want to find out if there's some truth to it before you drop the guy? That just, again, it's like, okay, someone makes a claim.
I think the thing with it is that the claim is stayed relatively the same. It's always, you know, sexual abuse and physical abuse and emotional abuse. It's who Chloe is, the Chloe's relationship to him changes.
And to me, if there's some question as to what the relationship is, why are we taking the statements of fact, as she puts it, to be absolutely true? It's like one person says one thing, the other person says the other thing. And obviously, if it's true, yes, he needs to be gone.
Right.
Yeah. But can we maybe find out that? Because, again, how do we not know that this isn't just, oh, now they've broken up? Or, you know, from what one article I saw, they had broken up 3 years ago.
Right.
Which again, is one of these things. It seems odd that you would wait till now. And maybe it just took the moment and the movement for her to feel empowered to say this. And again, if this is true, obviously we are supporting Chloe, whatever her last name currently is. But maybe they should wait for a little bit of due process, as opposed to someone says something immediately, well, it's true, so let's get rid of him. What exactly are you going to do for Chris Hardwick if it turns out these are all false allegations?
Oh, we'll put his show back in the Nerdist. Revert to a previous version of its website.
It's just this absolutely jumping the gun. I mean, I know this isn't a legal situation yet, but it's not like a jury convicted him just because someone said something and, oh, let's not even check evidence. We'll just take this person's word for it. But, man, I mean, his reputation is damaged by the allegations coming out. Do you really need to jump on it and cancel the show before you've done any checking whatsoever? I mean, like I said, that the allegations may be the same in all the stories, but they can't even get basic facts like, are they married?
Yeah.
I would think you would want to at least verify some really basic information before you fire the guy. And again, if it's true, he's not on the Chris roster anymore. Change your name, Chris. But can we at least get a little confirmation of what's going on, as opposed to, oh, well, this is the movement, so anything that's said by anybody is automatically true. It's just, put the brakes on a little bit, please.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned a court of law. Someone else who's in trouble this week had to do with a court of law would be Terry Gilliam.
Ugh. Which made me so sad.
This is the story that won't end. For about 10 years now, Terry Gilliam has been fighting to get The Man Who Killed Don Quixote in theaters, or as it's called in the South, The Man Who Killed Don Quixote. Anyway, apparently he had won one court case, which allowed him to put out the film at one film festival, but then he put it out at Cannes, and an appeals court in Paris said, no, can't do that. And now he has to give the rights of the film back to, who is it, Paolo Branco, who sounds like the mascot for a football team in Denver, if I'm honest, and has to pay damages and fees and everything. Like, damages and fees. He made the film popular. So that would be helping the movie. So Branco owes Terry Gilliam money, right? If only it worked that way. But
yeah.
Anyway, that's an very annoying story.
Yeah, I mean, a guy who's literally been working on this for decades, and now it's taken from him. I mean, that just seems, perhaps it's legally correct, but that just seems so wrong.
Yeah, plus there's so many versions of this now. Who knows what the, you know, even of this movie, who knows what happened and where the origin was, because it's been worked on for so long. But I don't know, it seems like this story, Man of La Mancha, has been remade so many times. It's like, is there any trademark left anyway? It's like, I don't know.
Who knows? Another issue, and this actually came up. This is not somebody who has gotten in trouble yet. He was thankfully not kicked off the movie he was working on. There's a British filmmaker named Adam Morse who just put out a movie called Lucid at the Edinburgh Film Festival,
I was there last night. It was wonderful.
Oh,
no, I'm just kidding.
This was a very bizarre story to me. It's not his first film. He did something called The Window back in 2014. But it came out during this movie to the cast and eventually the producers and people who funded the movie found out that this is a director who's blind. Not completely blind, but has only peripheral vision. He is legally blind, which is why on the set he was followed around with a 60-inch TV monitor so he could look at it sideways or something, I guess, and see what's going on. I have never heard of a blind director for a movie before.
I believe M. Night Shyamalan is blind. I might be wrong about that, but...
You've just watched his movies and gone, he must be.
Hoped in a way, you know.
But I saw this.
For some reason.
That's kind of a cool story. He's Lucid is even up for, what is it? It's the Michael Powell Award in the Best of British category. Don't know what that is, but okay. Sounds good.
Yeah, so American Sprinter. That's all I know. I guess he has British Film Awards. Yeah, that's really cool, actually. I don't know. Even just having only side vision, I can't even imagine that. What is that like? Living
that's
life like
weird.
That. Yeah, that's really strange. So,
good for him. He said he was very nervous about telling the people who funded the movie, by the way, I'm blind, halfway through filming, expecting them to fire him. There's a very good story on, where is this? Variety.com. Look it up. Adam Morse, no relation to the shortstop. Anyway.
Or the code.
Let's see, but being blind means he's probably safe from something that Disney and Pixar put out this week, which we'll get to the movie itself in just a minute. But this morning, Disney and Pixar kind of verified a story I've been seeing something about. The Incredibles 2 may not be safe for epileptic people. I saw a ton of warnings from a variety of sites saying, be careful, there's a lot of strobes, and it may trigger seizures and stuff. And it wasn't just reposting of the same story. It was lots of different written articles. Until, of course, this morning when Disney and Pixar issued a statement saying, all right, look, there's strobes. There might be issues with epilepsy. If you have problems, don't see this movie. Of course, this is after it's already opened. And one of us has even seen it. Todd. Did you have a seizure while watching The Incredibles?
I did not.
Okay.
Yay. Perhaps a seizure of joy, perhaps. Ah. Really, really good film. There are lots of flashing lights. Interest. I have not seen anything that anyone actually had any issues with it.
Was apparently one or two cases that I saw, but in a variety of states.
Yeah.
A Chris Hardwick thing where we don't know who it is, but,
which would be one or two too many cases, obviously. But apparently theaters are putting out the warnings now to let people know, which would have been good if they'd done that beforehand. But anyway, the movie itself, really, really enjoyed. And it's, to me, it bears a very similar relationship to The Incredibles as Deadpool 2 does to the first Deadpool movie. Not that they're at all similar, but they're both kind of maybe somewhat groundbreaking in the case of The Incredibles as well. It was just a big, big breath of fresh air, different from a lot of things that we've seen in the past. So being a follow-up, you don't really get that impact of, wow, this is super cool, because you've already seen the basics of it. But they do a lot of nice things with the plot. It focuses more on the kids. The issue that we had with the first trailer that came out, and we were all kind of thinking, wow, is this Mr. Mom, and it's just going to be Dad with Jack-Jack? There is quite a bit of Dad with Jack-Jack at home. But luckily, they basically showed the worst scenes in that trailer. Really? This is not a case where all the best stuff is in the trailer and you get to the movie and it's like, huh. They actually show very, very little of the best stuff in any of the trailers I've seen. That movie has tons of great sequences. It is somewhat the story of Mr. Incredible being stuck at home as as Mr. Mom. Incredible.
And
that's basically the point, because Elastigirl is chosen to spearhead this movement to get superheroes reinstated as being okay for society. And there's a reason that she's chosen, and it goes on from there. One of the things, there's more Frozone, which is great. There are more superheroes that come in later in the story, which is also fine. All of the Incredibles, with the exception maybe of Mr. Incredible himself, they don't have new superpowers, but they use the powers that they have in new, interesting ways, which is cool. So that's a nice switch on the first film. Basically, it's just really, really, really fun. It's a great movie. It's making the money it should. But I also want to mention, we're talking about the problem with the strobes. And yeah, I'm thinking that if you have epilepsy, you do not want to ever see this movie, because there are several sequences with this. And I could definitely say it would be problems. But there is a short at the beginning of it, because it's a Pixar film. So there's a little Pixar short, which is awesome. It's just such a good movie. And it's basically about a relationship of mothers and sons, and that's what it's about. And because it's all of like 5 or 6 minutes long, there's no reason to go into anything more than that. It's just an awesome little show. And it was funny, because imagine this, there were kids in the theater next to me. And this kid says, "I think we came to the wrong movie," when the short started. And they just kind of leaned over and was like, "No, this is just like a little show before the regular one. It'll be cool." So they watched it, and they were laughing, and they enjoyed the show, the Pixar short. And then the movie starts, and he leans over to the kid next to him when The Incredibles 2 starts, and he says, "See, I told you." It's like, yeah, totally told him, kid. And one more thing, though, Bob Odenkirk plays a major role in the film, mm-hmm. and it's great because the character looks like Bob Odenkirk.
I noticed that too in the trailer, actually. That's Bob
Odenkirk. Totally cracked me up. It's great. And it's there are some little twists and spins that you don't really expect, because you think, oh, I know what's going to happen. It's like, oh, no, they went a different way. That's really cool. So Incredibles 2 is very, very enjoyable, very fun, and it's going to make
a lot of money,
a crazy amount of money. Which goes back to, I guess we're going to hear a little later about another film, which isn't making as much money as was expected.
No. But we will get anyway, to that. There's a couple things between here and there, though.
Incredibles 2. Great, great movie. Much, much fun.
Speaking of fun and shorts, because this was a thing, Warner Brothers...
It's a family show. It's a family show, Rob. Be careful.
It's a fam. I know.
Okay.
I thought we were going back to Deadpool 2, where I was like, whoa.
Warner's announced this week that they're going to be bringing back Looney Tunes shorts at the beginnings of movies, which part of me loves the idea if they do it the way they used to do them. The other part of me is horrified because I know they're going to screw this up. Everyone's going to look like Dexter's Laboratory, and they're just not going to be funny. You guys have any thoughts on this?
My problem is, well, it's not just going to be in front of movies, which is great, and because Pixar's only been doing it since the beginning of Pixar, right. So yeah. nice to join the program, guys, especially since you pioneered this. But my thought is, well, for one, they're also going to be in the web and everything else, so that's not going to be the only format. My big hesitation is I'm not so fearful that they'll screw it up and they'll make everything look really cheap. My fear is that I'll actually have to go watch a Warner Brothers movie first to see the cartoon.
That's true.
Just release them in front of something else. Then I'm down with it.
Well, you know, Time Warner did finally complete their merger this week. Time Warner has now merged with AT&T. And I love what they're calling this, because I've been wanting to say this word on the air for years. Make Time Warner an AT&T an acronym. It's called TWAT. The only reason I've wanted to say it is because I'm not allowed to. That's it.
It's two T's at the end.
Makes
a difference.
It does. There we go. That's a thing. But because of that thing,
I'm thinking they won't go with that. But
I thought the AT&T was on the front. I thought it was AT&T.
At WAB.
It should be, and yet.
Because that's so easy to say.
Well, it's better than, you know, the obvious one.
Somebody would have
been marketing. You put a TWAT production on it, and it's all of a sudden become porn.
Truth in advertising. At WAB.
Anyway, yeah. Because of the merger, Comcast submitted its deal to buy Fox for, what was it, $65 billion in actual cash, as opposed to Disney's stock options or whatever it was. But all hope is not lost for Marvel fans, as there's a story circulating that they may be splitting the Marvel part, at least the Marvel part. They should split the Star Wars part off, too, and sell those bits to Disney, because the reason Comcast is doing this thing is because they want to own Sky Media, which is a... you know how we have, like, Dish and DirecTV in the States? Sky is for Europe.
It's huge in England. It's enormous.
And that's what they want. That's why they're making the deal. Not to screw over Marvel fans or Star Wars fans or... Are there fans of any other Fox franchises going?
Yeah, I mean, the simple thing would be for Comcast to do the whole deal and then just sell off Fox to Disney. And that's the part they're really not all interested in, and everybody's happy.
Exactly.
There's also talk that Comcast's deal may not even be accepted anyway, because apparently for tax purposes, Mr. Murdoch is more interested in the stock options. So even though it's a lower bid, that may go through anyway. Time will tell, but yeah, hopefully Comcast would just say, yeah, we don't really need that. We'll sell it off. And that way they recoup some of the billions and billions in cash that they're spending to get Sky, which is what they really want. So yeah, there's still a good chance that Marvel fans will come out happy with this. As long as Atwab doesn't buy Fox, I think we're okay.
That would be nice. And now, to the movie that lots of people have been talking about, including Todd, earlier in this show. John Travolta's Gotti movie, which has earned itself a rare and unique honor by getting a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is probably due to something. I saw one picture from this movie where I know it's John Travolta, but he looks like Schwarzenegger and Stallone had a kid, which is wrong. Anyway, I'm kidding. That's not the movie we're talking about. We've actually all, I think, seen Solo, the Star Wars movie that a lot of people aren't sure they wanted in the first place, but there we go. And how it's not making money, although...
Relatively speaking.
Relatively speaking. Compared to the other Star Wars movies, it's a flop. Compared to Ishtar, something completely different.
Compared to most movies, period. Yeah. Right. Well, it's a huge hit.
So what did you guys think of Solo?
Well, let me clarify. I still have yet to see Solo because I went to see
You Incredible said you were Stones going. Dead. I took you at your word.
And I saw... I decided to see a movie that would potentially give me seizures. But I knew it wouldn't, and I was afraid Solo might, so...
Well, in that case, Lee, what'd you think?
I thought the lead was just okay. I thought I thought Woody Harrelson was great. I thought there were a lot of things to like about the film.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was terrible by any stretch. I was entertained. Definitely wasn't the best Star Wars film I've ever seen, but, you know, for paying what I did, I think I went to see a matinee on a Sunday. It was worth the money. The lead was just kind of boring, which is, I know it says a lot about Han Solo that the lead's kind of boring. He wasn't terrible. Well, he wasn't terrible, but I wanted more Lando. I thought Donald Glover may have had, but they just didn't, you know, it's funny. People are saying he should have a spinoff, but really what they had him work with in Solo wasn't a whole lot. I thought, you know, some of the things, I thought Woody Harrelson was great in his role. Whoops, not surprised, right? But, you know, for him to bring Woody back from Cheers, that was an unexpected character. But, just kidding. I was so entertained by it. I didn't think it was terrible. I don't think people should. I haven't heard that it's terrible. What I've heard more is just how disappointing it is at the box office. I put my $10 down or whatever it was. I actually movie passed it down. So, you know, it was worth whatever I paid. I don't care how much it makes at the box office, really.
I had a couple of issues with some of the storyline parts, like this is not a complaint I've had for a couple of series, mainly sci-fi stuff, because how often do you hijack or I guess heist. It's a train heist. How often do you heist a train on another planet? And if you got spaceships, why are you using trains? I mean, I'm just throwing this out. I wanted to ask you this, though, because, you know, you've seen it. Todd. Anyway.
Hey, my nephew saw it, and he liked it a lot. Although he also said he wasn't really thrilled with the lead, which, yeah. I'm sorry, that's the one part of a movie called Solo you have to get right. You better have a charismatic lead.
I don't know who they would have gotten where it would have, you know, I mean, you're taking a chance with whoever you get. This guy was not the right pick, but I mean, you're really taking a chance with whoever you get.
I don't think he was hideous, totally. But he wasn't.
Yeah, exactly.
He was not Harrison Ford.
Right. That's the problem, which nobody is going to be Harrison Ford as Han Solo.
Exactly. Which to me is why you don't even bother making the movie.
True.
Because, that's a good point. You know, it's to me, it's just a cash grab. And that's why I'm just not all that thrilled in seeing it. It's just, oh, I know people will go see this because it's about Solo. It's like, but that character is so dependent on Harrison Ford. Anyway, yeah. I'm sorry.
It's still back worth seeing, Rob. Though. I mean, it's still worth seeing.
I'll movie pass it.
Meanwhile, during the train heist.
Yes.
did you notice that the music, the score of the movie, for no particular reason, turned into Akira? Did you notice that? And I thought that was just weird. And I don't know why.
When all Philip Glass, I don't know, it was just all minimal. The rest of the, no, I'm just kidding. That would have been awesome.
In that case, I'll go see it today.
You know, there were a few things in it that I had problems with. Like every so often, Solo would call his home planet Corellia. Mm-hmm. Which is wrong. It's Corellia. So there. Mm-hmm. And see, I'm still a fan of the books, which I've never mentioned that before. The Game of Sabacc was completely redone, and it's a lot more fun in the books. Kessel was a spice mine, not a hyperspace fueling station, which means, yes, Han Solo smuggled drugs. Mm-hmm. Conversely, Donald Glover, I thought was great. Paul Bettany, I thought was great because
yes,
he's Paul
fantastic.
Bettany.
Yeah, exactly. I agree 100%.
Warwick Davis was in this movie, and I think this is his fifth Star Wars movie, but the first one where he's had a line.
That's
I could
crazy.
Be wrong on that, but I'm fairly certain I'm not. Now, there was a thing at the end of the movie which kind of set up a sequel, which we may or may not get, who knows, where they bring back a character from a previous Star Wars movie that we thought was dead, although if you watch the TV series, that is somehow still canon, even though it's kind of crap. We know he's not dead, but he could be because, and I'm looking forward to the Blu-ray so I can pause it and find this glitch in their holographic transmission that showed someone else. He changed from this one character to an old man very briefly, and it might just have been me going, did he just glitch? I don't know.
He changed from an invisible man into Brad Pitt. It was very strange.
It could have been. I don't know.
If you haven't seen Deadpool 2, it's...
Yeah. So, anyway, but overall, it was a fun movie. I just didn't like it as a Star Wars movie.
Yeah, I think they didn't go off script enough from a Star Wars. They should have made it more fun. And the one thing that did detract from me is, you know, this is a giveaway, but he joins the Imperial Force because he wants to be a pilot.
That's in the books.
Yeah. Okay. But they just gloss over it. Like it's like scene and scene. You know, and it's like they could have fleshed out a little bit, like made him like, oh, this is because it's almost like he had no transition from how he was previous to that until afterwards. You know what I'm saying? He's right. Still the same guy. But if he'd been 3 years in the Imperial Force, maybe he would. But anyway, but I agree. Paul Bettany was great. Like he always is. I like him in everything, including Wimbledon, which is a fabulous film. If you haven't seen it, it's just,
you know what?
Kind of
even I've seen that and that was good.
Yeah. But yeah, I agree with you. It was a fine film. I mean, it was what it was, but it wasn't great and it wasn't Oscar worthy. And it definitely wasn't one of the better Star Wars films you'll ever see, but you know, it was still entertaining.
I have a quick question for you, Lee. You said it could have been more fun.
Because of the lead. The lead could have been more Harrison Ford.
Okay. I'm going to a Star Wars movie to have fun. And
well, yeah,
That's a big problem if the movie could have been more fun. I mean, I know you're not saying that doesn't change what you said about it, but it's like, wow, that's pretty telling.
He doesn't ever come across as having, and maybe hardly anybody could, as Han Solo. And I actually thought about Rob during the movie, so I'll get to that in just a second. But he didn't come across as...
Now I'm worried.
as the confident Han Solo.
Rob would have been an excellent Han Solo.
Well, man.
That's what I got from the previews.
That's the thing. Yeah, because he doesn't come across as...
No, he doesn't.
Hey, we're just winging this, and I've got all the confidence in the world it's going to work out. Because he doesn't really come across that way, and I think that was the biggest detriment to the film. The funny thing is that Rob always says Han Solo, and they make a reference to that in the movie.
Yeah.
So, they do. You have to go see it to figure it out.
Wanted to ask you one other thing about it. The ship that... I'll call it Paul Bettany's ship for lack of remembering of his character's name. did that not look like the ship that Malekith had in Thor 2?
Yes. Actually, I hadn't thought about that, but you're exactly right. Yeah. That's really funny.
It doesn't fall over and, crush. What did she call Mjolnir? Yum, yum. There we go. Which was the best line in that entire movie, by the way. But anyway, going from Thor to his DC counterpart, who is for some reason Green Lantern. I never quite figured out that switch, but it's a good segue for the show since that's where we're going. Geoff Johns, who was not the Martian Manhunter, announced that he was stepping down as DC Entertainment president and chief creative officer. So someone else is going to take over DC Comics, which is kind of sad because he's done some great books. His movies have been kind of crap. But speaking of his movies, he's going to still be writing the Green Lantern Corps film. So make of that what you wish. Yippee-yay-hui. Other DC movies that had news this week. Joaquin Phoenix's Joker movie is being made. They're going to start filming in October. There is not going to be a Batman in it. So, oh goody, another version of Gotham. Because... sure, we could. Yeah, we don't need that. And the next Batman movie is supposed to not have Ben Affleck in it. They've decided to go with a younger Batman because we've never seen that before. So make of that what you wish.
It's Shia LaBeouf. It's Shia LaBeouf. This
thing. Isn't he the same age as Ben Affleck by now?
Probably. Seems like he should be.
I hope AT&T crushes Warner's with an iron fist and just scraps that their whole mess is from last I've read. Isn't the Jared Leto Joker movie also still on?
Yeah,
somehow?
That's true. They are making a Jared Leto movie.
So we'll have two standalone Joker movies, which is fun.
With no Batman.
With no Batman. Could you be more confused about the direction of where you're going? The story came out last week that James Wan, the director of Aquaman, is doing everything he can to distance that movie from the entire Warner Brothers franchise, which is kind of sad. Asked them to change the logo to brighten it considerably because, of course, it was dark and grim because, you have a movie about a surfer dude.
Because none of the movies have any lighting to them.
Right. Oh, my God. Just two Joker movies. That's just brilliant. Because, of course, that's what Marvel did. I mean, they didn't need a Captain America movie. They just went and did two Doctor Doom movies instead. Oh, wait, no, they didn't. Holy crap. I don't think
he knows what he's doing.
I kind of want the Warner Brothers cartoons in front of Disney movies. That way I don't have to suffer. Jesus, what a horrible mess.
This is off subject, but who else is tired of the Mission Impossible trailer before every single fucking film?
The same Mission Impossible trailer?
The same one for any kind of film. It was in Tag. It's every film I've gone to see. Before the book club, it was
Let's go
there.
See My Little Pony.
Wait a minute. Are you serious?
Every film I've
they
seen.
They showed it before book club?
Yes.
Because that's the same audience. Wow.
Well, I guess, Tom Cruise isn't getting any younger. But, it's like, it's every film, literally every
Tom
film.
Tom Cruise is the new Batman.
I do have to say
that actually would be kind of cool. But I mean, it's like, but you see the trailer, yeah. And it's almost like, and it maybe it's, I'll probably see the film because I like the films are fun and Simon Pegg's in it, yada yada yada.
Yeah.
But it's just like I can't wait for the film to come out just so I don't have to see the effing trailers anymore.
Yeah, I agree. I like the trailer. I like the trailer the first maybe six times I saw it. But yeah, it is overload. It is getting to the point. Like, oh my gosh, please stop with it. Because it is, at least they didn't show it before Incredibles 2.
Which is a surprise, because like I said, literally every film I've been to.
Which when we get to more trailers, that couple trailers I wanted to mention, because there were some pretty cool trailers out.
We'll get to those. Almost there.
We will.
Before that, we're going to go where no one has boldly gone before or something. It's a Star Trek story. About this TV series Discovery, where the showrunners, Gretchen Berg and Aaron Harberts, and I'm probably mispronouncing those, but, you know, they're leaving the show anyway, so it doesn't matter, and they're being replaced with executive producer Alex Kurtzman. I don't have much of a care about this story, but, you know, there it is. They've tagged Alex Kurtzman. See, that's my segue for you, Lee, who saw a movie called Tag.
Thank you, Rob. I appreciate being on the show today. Thanks for everyone listening. Basically, my platform today is... No, I'm just kidding. So, Tag is... So there's... I think I've mentioned this several times on the show, but there's lots of movies out there that aren't supposed to be Oscar-worthy. They're really just supposed to be kind of fun movies. They don't have any weightiness. And Tag is based on a true story, actually, of some friends who grew up together. And every May, basically for the month of May, they spend trying to tag the other person. There's one person. And there's the original group had about 11 or 12 people. This film has five main people. And they're all guys who basically spend the month of May trying to tag each other. But really, they're just trying to tag the character of Jeremy Rimmer, who can't speak English, obviously, who's never been tagged. And this has gone on for 30 years. The other characters are the four characters, which is John Hamm, who plays. So John Hamm plays a CEO of an insurance company, and it really almost plays a little bit just on the very first part of the movie on his Mad Men character. The thing I like about the Jeremy Renner character is they actually play on his action hero character a little bit, because he does stuff in the movie to get away from the other characters so they can't tag him in a way that most humans wouldn't do. So that was kind of fun. Ed Helms is really, if there's a main character, he's the main character, because what he's trying to do, he's it at the start of the movie. But he has told everyone that Jeremy Rimmer's character is going to be out. He's not going to do it anymore after the next season. And Jeremy Renner's character, I'm just going to start saying Renner because I can't speak, is actually getting married too at near the end of the film. So they're trying to fit all that in and tag him and try to fit it in when he's getting married and stuff like that and the rules. But the thing about the movie, like I said, it's based on a true story. And you see the guys who actually did it later in the film, because some of the things that you see in the film, like Ed Helms dresses up like an old woman to try to get to tag Renner's character. And you see it later on, the real guys, and they have footage, like the VHS footage that they've taken of each other. Well, there actually is a guy dressed up like a woman. So a lot of the stuff you see in the film is actually true stuff that they've really done, which makes it better. it really starts off, the movie starts off as John Hamm's character is being interviewed by a Wall Street Journal writer who's played by Annabelle Wallace, who if people have seen Annabelle, she's in that. She's pretty blonde actress. She's fine. Isla Fisher is in it, and she's fine too. The women almost are secondary, but they become a little bit more primary throughout the film, which is good, and they play on that later in the film. But it really starts off with this. That's how the whole story ended up being made anyways, because there is a Wall Street Journal real article about these guys who play tag every year, as they have for, I think it's 26 years, as it turns out, when the movie was made. So that's real. And there's so much of the film that actually is real that you're not aware of until later in the film. It's like, that makes the film even better. They're not just making this crap up. A lot of this actually happened. But the key of the film to me, the thing that made it fun to watch, because it was for Father's Day, and my girlfriend, Donna, said, hey, you know, I want to take you out for Father's Day, and you choose. And I said, I want to see Tag, because I wanted to see something that wasn't an action hero movie, because I've seen a bunch of them lately, and I didn't want to see anything that was heavy. I wanted to see something fun, and this film met my expectations, because the main characters, Ed Helms, Jake Johnson from New Girl, if people haven't seen that, it's kind of a fun show with Zooey Deschanel, John Hamm, Hannibal Buress, and Renner's character, those actors, they seem like they're having fun when they're making the movie, and it comes off the screen that they're just having fun. And as a person watching the film, I had fun watching it. And I think it was because of the way the characters or the actors were acting out the characters. And then later on, seeing that actually, a lot of that stuff actually happened, made it even better. And then there's a scene at the end. There's not like any outtakes or anything, but they play this really saccharine song, and just the way they film it, Renner's singing it, but then the other actors are doing it's Crash Test Dummies, the they do that, and Renner's singing it, and then the other characters are kind of emoting with their faces, and it's just it's really funny. But yeah, it was a fun movie. It's not going to win any Oscars, you know, it's not going to be like top 10 list or anything like that. But if you want to go see a fun film for this summer, Tag is worth seeing. It was $28 million to make. It's made $14 million in its first weekend. I'm sure it'll make budget, and it's worth every penny.
That sounds fun. I have a quick question. Do you think Jeremy Renner enjoyed every moment of making that movie?
Well, I actually didn't know he broke his arms. It's funny because Rob was telling me pre-pro that they CGI or green screened a lot of the stuff. And
green screen casts.
Yeah, because it's funny when you're seeing some of the stuff he's doing, it's such a play on Hawkeye and things like that. But it's I would have no idea that they did that. It's so farcical in some scenes with what he's doing to get away. It makes sense. So it's not like, I mean, like, well, the scene where Ed Helms dresses up like the old woman, he's doing some things as far as martial arts that just people would not normally do. But it's funny. It's funny. They go to Jeremy Renner's town, and that's where the wedding's happening. And that's where basically the whole movie is happening. And he runs this fitness gym, and Ed Helms is dressed up like this old woman. And you see him just basically knocking the shit out of this old woman in this mall. And finally he's sitting on this, cause Ed Helms brought in this walker. So basically the scene ends with Jeremy Renner sitting on the walker, which is sitting on Ed Helms, so he can't move. And these two security guards come over, and they're like, whatever Renner's character is called. It's like, oh, I'm sorry, sir. Are you doing okay? Is this old lady bothering you? And it's just like, it's just really fun. And it's
that sounds really a lot of fun.
There is some weightiness at the end. There's a reason Ed Helms says, hey, Renner is out. Renner is not dying or anything like that, but there's a reason he says it at the end. And it's like, oh, and then at the very end, basically,
because he broke his arms.
Yeah, basically. But they're running. It's interesting. It's worth seeing and worth watching. Is it a little bit goofy at times? Of course. And does it have some slow moments with the goofiness? Yes. But it's still fun and still worth seeing.
Fun. You know, speaking of doing martial arts things that no normal human being would consider doing, Jackie Chan's in the news.
Woo!
This week. He's coming out with a new movie called Project X. He was originally supposed to team up with Sylvester Stallone, which sounds like a hideous idea.
Stallone. Though, I mean, it's not, I can see Jack, and this is, I don't know what you're about to get into sexually, but Jackie Chan and Stallone making a film together, the idea of that, I don't know how you feel, Todd, but the idea of that actually sounds kind of intriguing if they do it well. Of course, they won't with whatever Rob is about to say, but the idea is interesting.
Nope. Stallone has been replaced.
Bye.
With John Cena.
I thought you were going to say John Travolta for a second.
No, he's still gaudying. Yeah, John Cena and Jackie Chan.
Okay.
Sure, why not?
I can see that. I actually would have preferred to see Stallone and Jackie Chan, because Stallone can be very, very funny. It's just a lot of the movies of his past, two decades, he's chosen to stray from that path, but... he can be really funny. The thing with Gotti, I want to just touch on this very briefly with Gotti getting a whopping zero on Rotten Tomatoes. You know, it's been a long time since John Travolta has been in a movie that either made money or did well with critics. Just looking through the ratings, The movie previous to this is called Life on the Line. Hey, also got a zero.
Never heard of it.
On Rotten Tomatoes. I Am Wrath on 11%. Criminal Activities, a whopping 48%.
Is that the one where they say, I am Wrath? I am Wrath.
Yeah, maybe.
It's just a tree. Small tree.
The Forger, 9%. I mean, God,
it says a lot.
Man.
Sorry to interrupt you. It says a lot that I've never heard of any of these films.
Yeah, From Paris with Love. I have seen that. Not seen the film. I've just seen the title, 37%. That Hang actually made
that,
money.
That comes up with
$24 million.
From Paris with Love. Where was it? I have been collecting really bad taglines for movies, and that was one of them. Because it took place in France, right? So they added a little bit of French to it, except they screwed it up. The tagline from Paris with Love was, two agents, one city, no, it's supposed to be no mercy, but they spelled it in French,
oh,
which
no.
is no merci,
no merci,
which is no thank you.
Which that's people funny. Took to heart, apparently.
Apparently.
because that's it made funny. $24 million. I mean, you have to go back to 2010. Dude, why are they putting this guy in movies?
What happened in 2010?
That was From Paris with Love.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's how old that is. I mean, man alive. It's been a long time since Get Shorty.
Yeah.
I mean.
Which isn't that far off of Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, Face Off. I guess you could say it's probably his last really big hit. That's
It was a good TV show.
It's also the last hit for Nick Cage, probably.
Probably, yeah. It's interesting. They're both constantly making just, another movie. Really
weird. Sequels. They're making sequels to movies we didn't want in the first place. That's my segue.
Brilliant.
To our next segment, which there's some sequel news that came out this week. Like Ewan McGregor is going to be leading the new Shining sequel as the little boy from the first Shining movie. Did we need a new Shining movie? My daughter's
I don't know
a
if we
Stephen
did, but
King
based
fan
on what you
thought the
just
second
said,
book was crap.
Based on what you just said, I want to see that. That sounds phenomenal, actually. I don't think we needed one, but Ewan McGregor is a kid in the first one. It's like, grown up.
I mean, he's
extremely
a bit
interesting.
Grown now.
Yeah, I know that. But I mean, that idea sounds, it's Ewan McGregor, first of all. But that idea sounds interesting. Or maybe they did. Fargo 3. That's what it is.
You know, if they don't base it on the book, I think it's got a better chance.
it does.
I mean, if they base it on The Shining and don't base it on Dr. Sleep, because that book was not really great.
Yeah, I'm not a terribly big Stephen King fan in that I've never read any of the books nor seen a whole lot of the movies. I saw the movie The Shining, scared the crap out of me, which was exactly what it was supposed to do.
Which, and of course, Stephen King hates that movie. He hates he endorsed the TV version, which is god awful, and that's the version Stephen King likes, which is just strange.
Yeah, because
just really,
books,
really strange.
As much as they try to make the movies off the books sometimes just don't translate well to movies. Because he actually, and I know Todd likes him, he's a good writer. And in fact, a lot of the stuff that the shorter stuff that he's written, like Stand By Me and Shawshank Redemption, I mean, those are all Stephen King stories that have nothing to do with horror.
You know, the thing is, I don't really think he's technically a good writer. He's a good writer.
He's a good writer,
I think he's a great storyteller. I think that's the difference with Stephen.
There's a better way of putting it. That's true. Yeah, that's
funny. His writing is like, oh, my God, we don't need 800 or 900 pages for The Stand. We just don't need it.
No, but sometimes when he writes the shorter stuff, it is good. Yeah.
Exactly. His novellas, those are the ones that turn into the best movies. Stand By Me, Shawshank Redemption, like you said, those typically wind up being the best Stephen King things. A lot of his longer novels, I still like some of his longer novels. It just depends. But a lot of times it's just too much. And the novels, they need to be miniseries, like 11, 22, 63. That was really good. That's on Hulu, about a guy who's back in time to try to prevent the assassination of JFK. Book's pretty good, and
good
the series is pretty good. Yeah, things don't turn out well because it's a Stephen King story. So surprise, surprise.
but they do in Shawshank.
I enjoy. That's true. They do sometimes. And Shawshank is my favorite Stephen King story, novel, whatever, that he's ever written, because it is so hopeful. and the movie the same. It's just incredibly optimistic. I was like talking to my daughter last night, and she said, "You're so optimistic and hopeful. You like all these hopeful things." She says, "I just like the really dark things where everybody dies." So I recommended a movie to her, which is a little hopeful, but everybody still dies. So
Deadpool 2.
Anyway, I'm kind of looking forward to Dr. Sleep, but only because of Ewan McGregor, because the story just didn't need to be written. I didn't think it was that good. Anyway.
Actually, speaking of writing and things that they probably don't need to be making.
Exactly.
That would be the Amazon Studios version of whatever they're doing with the J.R.R. Tolkien stuff. Because they came out with, I don't know if you guys saw this, there was an interview this week with, what is her name? Jennifer Salk? Salky, I'm not sure which it is, because I've only seen it in print. She's in charge of all the Tolkien stuff that Amazon is allegedly doing. And she says that the Lord of the Rings TV series is neither a remake nor a whole new thing, which sounds to me like she has just as many plans for this as DC has for whatever the hell they're doing.
What exactly is it going to be?
Who knows? It makes no sense.
And I believe you were the one who said this earlier on an earlier show, Rob, is like, we don't really need this because it's Lord of the Rings. Those movies are just, I can't imagine doing the story better. It's done. The only reason to do it is to make money, which is not a good reason to make movies.
No.
That's what they were. They talked about The Incredibles too, and I'm sorry for jumping back to this.
Oh, go ahead.
But they asked Brad Bird, okay, why all this time? He said, because I don't want to make a sequel just as a cash grab, and most sequels are just cash grabs. I wanted to wait until I had a story to tell, and this is how long it took.
Did you say sequels were cash grabs? Because that goes right into the next bit, because earlier this week, let's see if I can do this. Finally, The Rock has announced a Jumanji sequel. That's a cash grab, because he wasn't even actually in the movie. It was a computer-generated version of The Rock in a video game that the kids got zapped into. How are you going to bring The Rock back unless they get zapped into the video game? Which means, oh goody, we're doing that story again.
You're so technical, Rob. You're so technical.
I'm being picky.
I didn't know there wasn't a sequel already. I thought they already had a sequel for some reason. Maybe that was just the remake of the original.
It was a remake of the original,
yeah,
which is also a sequel of the original of the remake of a Peter Pan movie. Which just got a bit ridiculous. Speaking of remakes, because that's what we do, trailers for this week. See, I told you we'd get there. First big trailer I saw this week was for the Tim Burton live-action version of Dumbo, which, did you guys see this? Because it looked sad. I don't mean pathetic or anything. I mean, I think I'll cheer myself up by listening to Pink Floyd sad.
Dumbo is sad, though.
It is.
I know, but at least the animated version had a bit of lightheartedness to it, even in the trailer. I'm looking at this trailer going, it's the Titanic. No one's going to live in this. Dumbo's going to, he's going to lose the feather and, you know, face plant. Oh, the elephant died. You know, I can't bring myself to even take me to see something like that, much less my kids. And it's supposed to be a kid's movie. It isn't supposed to be a kid's movie. It's Tim Burton. Who knows at this point?
Quite true.
Batman Returns, not a kid's movie. Just saying. What did look like a kid's movie was the Grinch trailer, which, if I'm honest, the original, How the Grinch Stole Christmas animated version was brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And this trailer just makes it look like a waste of Benedict Cumberbatch, who is the Grinch, by the way, in case you didn't recognize his voice, because you shouldn't. It doesn't sound like him.
I mean, So I've seen the trailer, and my hope for the movie is, because they have a Stephen King reference in it too, original, like right away, because that's what he's reading when he throws it on.
Yeah,
I see.
And that's my hope for the film, is that it, besides them maybe just having the Grinch, is that they'll have enough like of those pop iconish moments where there's like Easter eggs enough to make it interesting, because I don't know what they do otherwise. Because it's, you know, it's based on whatever it's based on. Dr. Seuss did write another Grinch thing, so it could be that. But I mean, I don't know. I have hopes for it just because it's Benedict Cumberbatch, and the fact that they started with that Stephen King reference. I was like, oh, maybe this actually will have some merit. Because the first time I saw the trailer, I totally missed that, and I'm like, this is complete crap. And then when I saw
our website.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it is. But the second time I saw it, before the Mission Impossible trailer, I thought it was, you know, much more interesting. So. And it's Cumberbatch. So what they should do is a Cumberbatch and John Hamm film, because really one is the English version of the American actor, because they're both just really serious actors who do really goofy stuff in real life. Just FYI. That's the end of the show. Thanks for listening.
What other trailers did you... Todd, you mentioned you saw a couple you wanted to talk about.
Yes, Ralph Breaks the Internet. Trailer looked really, really funny. Wreck-It Ralph, I was kind of when I finally watched it, and I was like, oh, this is much better than I expected. This movie looked really, really good. Biggest reason is because they poke a lot of fun at Disney itself. Premise is Ralph breaks out of their little video game world with his little sister, or who the heck this small child is, but I believe it's his sister. So
she's a princess from the neighboring video game at the arcade, which
there you go, that's what who she is. And of course she's a princess, and they decide to go to the best site on all of the internet, and of course it's Disney, because it's a Disney movie. But they immediately poke fun of that, because she winds up in a room with Disney princesses, and they're trying to identify her claim to be a princess, and they run through the categories of what makes a princess in the Disney world, and it is awesome and hilarious. The only one I want to mention is the two princesses who ask if she has been either kidnapped and abused, to which she says no. And then they determine, oh, this is why she's a princess. It's just such a great... And there were everything in the trailer is really, really funny. So I'm actually looking forward to that. But the fact that it's very wink, wink, it's letting people know, yeah, we get it. So I thought it was just great. The other trailer, which surprised me, and this may actually be a decent movie, and don't cut me off. Give me 20 seconds to explain, is the trailer for Bumblebee.
I mentioned that last week, how it didn't look hideous.
Yeah, it's actually looks like...
They finally did a Transformers movie correctly.
Well, the...
No, and what, I'm not going to go that far.
Yeah, well, the thing is at first I thought it was a trailer for a remake of Herbie the Love Bug, which I thought, oh, that's kind of weird and sad. But the fact that it has Hailee Steinfeld, which that's a plus, because she's an excellent actress. And the fact that it's making the story small and personal. It's not about the end of the world again and again and again and again. So this may actually work, because it's told on a smaller scale, which God knows they need to, because they keep getting bigger and bigger and it gets more boring and boring, which is why I haven't seen, I don't know how many Transformer movies now, because the trailers just look like, oh, I saw that 6 years ago. I saw that five, you know, why? Don't need to see it again and again and again and again. And of course, John Cena is in this, because John Cena is in everything.
He's the new Chris.
He is the new Chris.
He's the new Dwayne Johnson, who's in everything. How many movies has that guy got to his credits at this point?
Yeah,
in the last
sure.
2 years. 16, right?
Yeah, pretty sure if John, like if that. They must just talk. It's like, hey, I don't have time to do this, because I'm doing two movies right now. Can you handle this, John? I'll see if I can work it in. It's pretty
good. But if it's a straight to video thing, they get the Miz.
God.
Well, how are they not in the same film? Have they not been in the same film at this point? Surely they have.
Or they get John Travolta.
Yeah.
Or Benedict Cumberbatch. Because. Although, speaking of Cumberbatch, he and Peter Dinklage and Tiffany, although I spelled this wrong in my notes, it's Tiffany, Haddish, are all being sought for the movie version of Spamalot.
Hopefully not for the same role.
I would hope not. But that goes straight into, you know, that Spamalot is a spinoff, I suppose, of last week's greatest TV program of all time of the week, being Monty Python, which I watched about, geez, I watched like 15 episodes of that this week. Because I have that kind of time and a sick kid who hadn't seen them yet and went, Dad, this stuff's weird.
Yeah. Yes, it is. I showed it to Fiona, and I think she enjoyed it a little bit. But I remember as a young age, I don't know if it's because Monty Python to me is like it's everlasting. I would find it funny when I was 15 or 85. Right. But for I don't know if it's a generational thing where, like, when I was 15, I found it hilarious, Flying Circus and the movies hilarious. And when I show it to her, I still find it hilarious, but I'm like, she's not finding it as funny as I thought she might. And I just wonder if visually she's seeing things differently than I'm seeing them. It's not the humor. I think it's the visuality of the show itself, because it's just so rudimentary, you know, BBC in the 70s.
But where's the cell phones and the computers and stuff?
Well, what you do is you stick your finger up one's nose and then the cell phone.
Put it in the other nostril to end the call.
Exactly. It's in stereo if you put it in the other nostril.
That's at the same time, though, yeah.
But that was last week's greatest TV program of all time.
What's this week's?
This week's, it is my turn, right? Because I've lost track, actually.
I believe you're correct.
Sticking with the BBC, so I've got like several shows I wanted to do with this, but we've brought up Doctor Who a lot.
We
have over the years that we've been doing this show. And I thought, you know what? It's about time we talked about it a little bit anyway, because it's the longest running sci-fi show in the history of ever. Yes, it started in 63 and ended in 89, but then started up again in 2005. And it's the same series, in case people were still confused by that, because a lot of people thought, oh, they just started it over. No, same series, including guest stars from the old version in the new version. And I'm bringing it up again because Jodie Whittaker, who's playing Dr. 13, had a birthday yesterday. Happy birthday, even though you're still very young, and that's annoying.
Happy birthday, Doc.
Started in 1963 as a show about a Time Lord from Gallifrey who has a time machine that's supposed to camouflage itself wherever it goes, but he got stuck in London when they had police boxes still, and it camouflaged itself as a police box and stuck that way because the chameleon circuit is broken. Fine. So wherever he goes in time and space, it's always a police box, which kind of became iconic in a weird sort of way. But the thing about the series, and I think the reason for its longevity, is not the acting. If you go back to the 60s and 70s, it sure as hell isn't the special effects. Look at the string. That's not it. It's the stories. Because they came up with some really incredible and intricate stories to put into this series that even today you don't get in other series. There have been other time travel series that don't do it nearly as well as what Doctor Who has done. And now with the new series, the one that restarted in 2005, we're finally having special effects start to catch up. They're not quite there yet, but they're getting... It's a TV series. You can't have that big a budget. So it's a spectacular series that, frankly, you can actually start just about anywhere. Although I'll recommend Tom Baker's years, which would be, what, 71, I think? When did Tom Baker start? Because, yes, there have been Jodie Whittaker being the 13th character or actor to play the character of the Doctor. Because every so often, the actor wants to leave, so the character regenerates, gets a whole new body, whole new personality, but keeps the memories, which is kind of a clever way of doing it, instead of the old soap opera thing of, the part of Bob is now being played by Steve, and you kind of go, oh, okay, whatever. But I thought that was, I mean, that's one of the clever things I think that they put in to keep the series going. You guys can jump in at any... Are you even still
and
here?
And you are correct. Tom Baker was 1974, was his first year. Tom Baker for a lot of people, I guess, is like the iconic version of Doctor Who, because I think that's probably...
He's the one that shows up on The Simpsons.
Yeah. And he's more or less the iconic one. I mean, I haven't seen nearly all of the Tom Baker episodes, but I have seen several of those. For me, the iconic Doctor Who is a more recent one. It's David Tennant. It's just such a cool concept because every Doctor is different. And I don't mean just a different actor. I mean, they're very different personalities, even though they're the same person, which is kind of strange. Which gives the show more depth and more room to explore different things because they may even be in the same situations, and frequently are, that a previous incarnation was in, but they respond differently.
How did we get out of this last time?
Yeah, exactly. But they're going to respond differently because they're different. They're different people. So I'm not as big a fan of the Doctor as you are. I'm not sure anybody is, but but it is.
Yes,
just,
there are.
But it is.
I don't
just,
have the tattoos.
But it is a phenomenal show. And especially, like you said, because the strength of the show is the writing. And that's that should be the strength, I mean, of everything. It certainly is
good writers,
the special effects. For the,
did you know Douglas Adams of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy fame wrote several episodes of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And you can kind of tell he did because those are ones that are kind of, that's really weird.
Crazy.
But awesome at the same time. So
imagine that. Douglas Adams writing something really bizarre. yeah, I mean, it's certainly not the even now, it's not the special effects. That's not what,
I mean,
but that's not what it's about.
They're not hideous.
No.
Now.
But they're not state of the, they're far from state of the art because that's not what the show's about. Never has been. And again, I mean, it's the storylines, and some of the stories are very touching and sweet, and some are incredibly scary. I'm thinking of one in particular, and I know you know which one I'm thinking of, Rob, because we've talked about
would that
this
be
one.
The episode we recommended to Lee that he probably still hasn't watched?
No,
probably,
because I want to watch them in order, honestly, and I want Fiona to watch them because I haven't watched any of them. I take that back. I've seen one episode, and it was not anywhere near the beginning. It was like 2010. So I'm a novice, and it's not something it's not like I don't want to watch it. I do want to watch it. I just actually want to make sure I have
finding time for this.
Exactly.
Is going to be
exactly, exactly right. It takes time to watch
because
there's so much good stuff out there. It's hard.
Hundreds of episodes, and this actually doesn't even include the ones that were lost. There were a lot of episodes. The original Doctor William Hartnell, through Patrick Troughton, and into John Pertwee. The first three Doctors, a lot of those episodes were lost because they kept them on film in an archive at the BBC, which burned down.
Mm.
So a lot of those were lost, although, and I thought this makes perfect sense for a sci-fi series. When it first started, there were, you know, the moon landings and everything going on, and people were so focused on space that they started broadcasting BBC programs into space, including Doctor Who. Now, a few years ago, they started receiving a signal back from space where the BBC signals were basically just reflected. And so they started getting some of these lost episodes back in kind of really crappy quality, but possibly fixable.
That's insane.
New technology.
That is.
So we may be getting the old episodes back, including the episode where William Hartnell regenerates into Patrick Troughton. We may be getting it back someday. They're working on them.
Wouldn't it have been cool, though, if somebody, like some other higher life form had seen them and then, like, remixed it and sent it back in, like, a higher... And it was like, oh, this is 4K already. Thanks.
It was the Daleks.
Oh, yeah. Hopefully it's not them. Oh, God.
Although, that would work. Either way.
How bizarre.
Absolutely. Which is a great way to end the show on a bizarre note. Unless you guys have anything else, I have nothing else. 3, 2, 1. No, they have nothing else, so we're ending the show. And
that's classic.
Thank you. We'll be back next week with a lot more stuff, because there is always more stuff. Have a good week, everybody.
Captain, we're losing power on the warp engines.
I think we should be leaving now.
I'm going to go home and sleep with my wife.
And on that unusually harmonious bombshell, it is time to end.
I am very disappointed!
Man, we have a weird job.
It's shameful, but it's a living.
And like that, he's gone.
Darn, that's the end.